Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Welcome back on this Father's Day weekend. I am your host, Elissa Walker Campbell, and the biggest and brightest stage. Hey, it's taken place with the NBA Finals. Oklahoma City continues to show us that they are not blinded by the light and the big stage. We saw that in Game 1 as they were down by as much as 13 points in the first half. They got off to that slow start, but the Thunder continued to prove that they are capable of making winning plays down the stretch, coming out in the fourth quarter, and taking care of business. And I'm always looking so forward to our next guest. He is providing the helping hand. We love his perspective on the NBA Finals, Bob Berry Jr. And you know what? I bet that silver hair of yours, it's got to be on fire with just the frenetic pace, keeping up with the sports animal and KFOR and these two outstanding teams.
Well, sure, it's fun. Me being an Oklahoma lifer, no offense to you. I mean, this is almost as big as watching Elissa Walker Campbell be a basketball star at OU back in the day. but not, almost as big as that, not quite. But seriously, when I thought the zenith of my athletic career as a media member covering big events was the 1996 CBA championship that the Oklahoma City Cavalry won, or maybe a Central Hockey League championship by the single A Oklahoma City Blazers. I mean, these are moments in my career when I thought, hey, this is about as good as it gets. How awesome is this? And now to have the NBA Finals in Oklahoma City, downtown Oklahoma City, I mean, it's really hard to wrap your head around for a lot of us Okies who have been around forever.
Well, I've spent a lot of time in the state of Oklahoma, and, you know, on the drive into Fort Worth this morning into studio, I was thinking about, you know, over 20 years ago, just what you were talking about, the CBA, the Cavalry. My roommate in college, she was one of the cheerleaders. I mean, did you ever think this could become a reality, the NBA Finals in Oklahoma City, as you just said?
No, and I even remember, you know, the movers and shakers in our town have been the same guys forever. Clay Bennett, you know, who owns the Thunder, was a guy, I remember when they had a news conference, probably 20 years ago as well, 15, 20 years ago, when they were going to try and bring the National Hockey League to Oklahoma City.
That's right, yes.
It was the most viable option. And then that fell through for whatever reason. I mean, I remember the Chamber made a big deal about it. They went out and had this huge presentation to the NHL, and they felt good about it. And then the NHL said, hey, we really appreciate it. We're not going to expand there yet, but you guys are doing all the right things. Keep it up. And, you know, Bennett was real positive in his spin after that, even though in defeat where Oklahoma City didn't get the franchise. And then after that, about 3 or 4 years later, as I recall, and my timeline could be skewed a little bit, but same thing happened for arena football in the number one league, like to go play Joe Avezzano's Dallas Desperados or whatever. I mean, that was a big deal. Everybody was like, oh, wow, arena football might come to Oklahoma City. Eventually it did, not at that particular time. But I remember all these quests for, you know, quote-unquote big league sports, and we were all gung-ho about it. Hope it happened, and then when it didn't, we were like, we're just destined to be a top-notch minor league city because we've had AAA hockey. We currently have AAA hockey. We've had AAA baseball here forever. So we thought, okay, well, that's fine. You know, it's supported, and then we always have Oklahoma and Oklahoma State collegiate sports at the highest level, so we're good. But so this was never even on my radar. I never even thought about it, to be honest with you. I remember John Rohde with the Oklahomans telling me once years ago, hey, there's a chance the New Orleans Hornets are going to come to Oklahoma City for like a year or two because of Hurricane Katrina. I was like, yeah, right. Come on, you know, you shouldn't drink press box cocktails. And yet that happened, and we know where that led. I mean, if it weren't for the Hornets, we wouldn't have the Oklahoma City Thunder today. So the city owes a huge debt of gratitude, in my opinion, to George Shim, the old owner of the Hornets, and Chris Paul and David West and these guys, and even Byron Scott, who was the coach at that time, for not only, you know, coming here with the Hornets, but being successful, playing right, working hard, and getting a fan base that knew nothing about the NBA all jacked up about it.
You know, Bobby, there's been so much focus on the team and just the success that they continue to have only in its fourth season. But really, talk a little bit about as far as the Thunder fans and just give us a pulse on that, because this has been so special. It's been unifying. You know, you were just talking about, you know, the Sooners and the Cowboys, and that it's really created that special type of unity right there in the state of Oklahoma.
You know it, too. I mean, you know, you've done outstanding work in the past for the Thunder and for OU and OSU, and you've been a collegiate athlete in our state. These people, they respond to winners. They respond to hard work. That's always been the case, and not even in athletics. I mean, if you're a company and you work hard and you're philanthropic, we currently have one called Chesapeake Energy, and this company has done everything for the city, and now they've got the naming rights to the arena downtown and the whole City supports Chesapeake Energy, even though they're going through some tough times because the oil business can be up and down. But if you work hard and you act like you care and you're not in the police blotter every night around these parts, that's a big level, you know, recipe for success among the fan base. And this city and state is nuts for this basketball team. It's crazy. And I think Clay Bennett, when they won the Western Conference Finals against the Spurs last week, said it's the most unifying event or team in state's history. And he's absolutely 1,000% correct, because even though Oklahoma's won their 7 national titles in football and Oklahoma State's been to Final Fours in basketball and all this stuff, you always have the state divided, OU and OSU fans on either side of the aisle. So this thing has brought everybody together. Like you can't believe. I'm saddened that a few knuckleheads decided to take to the streets with some guns after the L.A. Lakers closed out a few weeks ago, and it ended this thing called the Thunder Alley Watch Party, where they had 7,000 fans in the street watching this giant big screen on the side of the arena, and it was cool. It was fun. I was in the middle of it doing TV live shots that whole series, you know, and a few knuckleheads, like I said, spoiled the party for everybody to where the Thunder had to cancel that, but that thing was growing and becoming fun, so... This city is really, really supportive, and I promise you, sure, it's winning, but more than anything, it's character guys. It's like a college team because of the youthful age and exuberance of Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka and James Harden and all these 20-somethings that are the second youngest NBA finalists since Bill Walton's 77 Portland Trailblazers. Incredible.
Well, Bobby, there are so many compelling storylines, and I had just mentioned, you know, the fourth year for the Thunder to be in Oklahoma City. It has been a unique season, an abbreviated season. Did you think when things got fired up and started in the month of December that, you know, ultimately that Oklahoma City would be in the finals, that they really had a legitimate shot?
Well, I did, just because they'd made the Western Conference Finals last year, and we knew everybody was back. Now, when Eric Maynard got hurt at the start of the season, we were all like, uh-oh. Because he was a real big cog in that march to the Western Conference Finals, a really good steadying influence and a contrast to Russell Westbrook's aggressive, relentless type of starting point guard play. So when Maynard went down, we were concerned, but yet they breezed through the first half this year, 27-7 at the All-Star break. And we thought, okay, wow, this could go somewhere. Well, really, at the end of the regular season, the Thunder didn't play very well. They went 8-7 in the final 15 down the stretch before the playoffs started, and we were... at that point kind of questioning, are these guys tired? Because everybody went through that grueling pace. Dirk and the Mavs all talked about the grueling pace, the 66-game schedule. So I didn't think so at that point. I thought they'll be lucky to get to the Western Conference Finals because they lost their number one seed. You know, Oklahoma City was the number one seed in the West for most of the regular season. When they lost that to the Spurs, and then, like I said, were barely over 500 in that closing 15 games, I thought they were maybe fizzling out a little bit. But, man, they picked it up with that sweep of the Mavs. The Lakers series really gave them huge confidence because they had lost, been eliminated by the Lakers, you know, 2 years ago in the playoffs. And then to beat the Spurs, in my opinion, to this day, I think the Spurs is the best team they've played this year and will be the best team, including the Heat. So when they got past them, here you go, 3 wins away from a world championship, perhaps.
You are listening to the voice of Bob Berry Jr. with the Sports Animal out of Oklahoma City and also KFOR Television. And let's kind of break down some of the X's and O's. I want to zero in on defending LeBron James. It was a big storyline coming into this series. What do you think of Oklahoma City's approach? Because head coach Scott Brooks, he had Tabo Cephalosha on him in the first 9 minutes of game one, and LeBron had difficulty getting any isolations.
Well, he did, and then Kevin Durant played against him a lot. And I think, in my mind, two biggest changes or improvements on this team, besides the fact that overall team defense has been better, has been the defensive play of the scorers, the all-stars, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. Both of them have shown a great ability to be able to guard and defend all season. It's gone very undertold and undersold across the league, but Kevin Durant played LeBron pretty tough. Now, LeBron's great. He's an MVP for the reason. I think he gets way too much criticism for his game. It's scary how good that guy can be. I don't know if you remember the play the other night when he stole one at half court.
Yes.
Right in front of Durant, and it literally seemed like he took two dribbles and wham, he slammed it. You're going, that would have been a play that, you know, Billy Sims would have been proud of, or Joe Washington, or Barry Sanders. The speed with which he got from half court makes the steal to the rim in a blink of an eye, you're going, and he's 6'9", weighs 275. I mean, what is this guy? He's a freak. So I think he's wonderfully talented. So to hold him, quote-unquote, to 30, I think was pretty good, considering he torched my Celtics for 45, you know, a week before. So I think Cephalosha was brilliant on him at the end of the game because Durant lit it up for 17 in the fourth quarter, and Cephalosha held King James to 7 points in the final quarter, and that was a huge part of that win the other night.
Well, LeBron James, he really is, Bobby. He's a special kind of athlete, a complete package. He's a thing of beauty to watch. But, you know, if you are Scott Brooks, you have a big concern when you are putting Kevin Durant and guarding LeBron, because he is so good at assaulting the rim and getting his body into your body. I mean, his attack angle, when he drops that shoulder into your chest, I mean, he's going to draw the foul.
He's a freight train, but yet Brooks was pretty adamant about that the other night. Even in his pregame interview, you know, 45 minutes before tip or whatever, he said, somebody asked, are you worried about Kevin Durant getting into foul trouble if those two superstars match up? He said, not at all. He said, Kevin's a smart defender, and he's long and all that, and he can come up with plays that will surprise you, or block shots, or reach around, you know, turnovers, whatever. And he's right. Durant got a turnover a foul early in the game, like literally a minute or two into the game, it seemed like, when LeBron pump-faked him and got the foul, and you go, whoa, that was pretty quick. But that was it. KD didn't have any more fouls, I don't think, until the fourth quarter. So Durant's a smart defender. Russell Westbrook's a smart defender. Cabo was brilliant all season. He was good against Kobe. He was really good against Tony Parker. He was good against LeBron the other night. I tell you, in my mind, what I'm expecting to see is Dwayne Wade doesn't appear healthy to me at all. I don't know what he looks like to you, but he just looks like he's definitely hobbled. And James Harden is not going to have another five-point game and four personal fouls in 22 minutes. He's just not. He's too good offensively. Same thing happened in the Lakers series, where one game he went 0-for-0 at the foul line. We're like, what was that? Well, the next game he had 30, and he went to the line 13 times off the bench, which is why he won the Sixth Man of the Year award. So I expect Harden to have a much better game offensively. I'm guessing, I'm expecting to see Wade play healthier, and if he doesn't, then he's in trouble.
Well, there's been a lot of chatter about that as far as Dwayne Wade, and, you know, I was curious what your observation was on that, because he's not playing like he is capable of, all NBA, and he's got to get going. He's got to get going early in the first half. I mean, what are some of the adjustments do you think the Heat need to make in order to get back in this?
Well, Wade looks just like he's hurt to me. I mean, again, maybe I'm sounding like I'm defending him, but we've seen so many moves that he makes along the baseline where he's so explosive and gets to the rim quickly and draws fouls and gets to the line. He did none of that the other night, and he was 7 of 19 shooting, and he had no chance of getting in front of Russell Westbrook defensively. I mean, Westbrook blew by him whenever he wanted. So that would be a concern of mine if I were the Heat. We were surprised that Miami only played six guys more than 10 minutes the other night. They went with a very short bench.
Good point.
Chris did not start. We were surprised by that, although I was also surprised to the positive for the Heat that Shane Battier was throwing in three-pointers everywhere at the beginning of the game. That was the most points he'd scored in a playoff game in 3 years, and he did it in the half, in the first half. And then Mario Chalmers, you know, had, I think, 12 points at halftime. So I think if you would have gone into the halftime the other day and said, hey, by the way, Battier and Chalmers have a combined 29, and, you know, Wade hadn't really gotten started yet, and neither is Bosch, and you know, should be in pretty good shape in the second half, I think that he would have said, you're right. And yet, when it was over, the Thunder had kind of regrouped, and I got the feeling, and I'm trying not to be a homer about it, but I told Derek Fisher, and he agreed with me after the game, I go, I think you guys just won the game going away, and you didn't play very well. And you could play a lot better. He said, you're right. And they won by 11, and I felt like if the game would have lasted a fifth quarter, the Thunder would have won by 25 or 30. The Heat were just dead. Once they got passed, late in the third, when Westbrook got the old-fashioned three-point play to end the third, the Thunder never looked back, and they overwhelmed Miami in the second half. It was surprising.
Only about 60 seconds with Bob Berry Jr. this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And as you know, here we are in the weekend program as the Thunder go on the road on Sunday into Miami. I mean, talk to us a little bit about, as far as refresh all the listeners. I mean, we follow very closely, obviously, the Dallas Mavericks down here in Dallas-Fort Worth. But how are the Thunder on the road, and how did they do against the Heat this year?
Pretty good team. They played just two games total. Both of them won on their home floor. Both of them were 8 days apart. The Thunder took apart Miami and Oklahoma City. They won 103-87 during the regular season, and it wasn't that close. They were up by 23 or 4 and rested the starters in the fourth. That was a national TV game. And then 8 days later, played in Miami, I want to say back in December, maybe early January, and the Heat won that one 98-93. Chris Bosh hit a couple of real big baskets at the end of the game, kind of like he did, you know, against the Celtics the other night in Game 7 when he started going three-point crazy. That's why I expect Bosh to play more tonight. I think he'll start. I think you got to have him out there if you're Miami. Their stats are ridiculous. They're now 48-16 when he's playing, and 10-10 without him. That's what they were going into the playoffs. And so I was surprised when he didn't start the other night, but I kind of understood it. I thought, okay, they're going to try and find a spark off the bench. Well, he gave them that. So they might want to start him tonight. We'll see. But I think the Thunder is a good road team. They have been all season. They're really good off the feet. Not that they've lost yet, but they're 18-3 off directly coming off losses. So they aren't in awe of anybody. And like I said, they won in San Antonio. They won in L.A. They won in Dallas during the playoffs. That's a pretty good trifecta right there. So why can't they win in Miami during the playoffs?
That's Bob Berry Jr. with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. We want to take time to wish you a very happy Father's Day. I'm sorry you're not going to get the weekend off.
Oh, that's okay. I'm just trying to figure out a way to watch the U.S. Open. That's always one of my Father's Day traditions, so I got to somehow make time to watch that golf. Always great to talk to you, and I appreciate that.
You take care. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a minute. Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. We will be right back.